Blog Talk Radio.
About to enter the world of Paranormal Concepts on the Paranormal Concepts Radio Network with your award-winning host, Evan Jensen, and his co-host, baby, is Charity Oswald. Sit back, enjoy. Let's get our paranormal on.
All right. Hey, I'm Evan Jensen. Welcome to Paranormal Concepts Radio Network. It is Friday evening here. In queue with us is Carissa Fleck, Nikki Paranormal, and Kyle Ryan. The host of your show is Charity Oswald. Charity, welcome to Paranormal Concepts Radio.
Hello, how are you?
Doing just fine. You know, the daily grind of our typical average busy work week is ended, and we're on our Friday evening, and we're live with three people here that are going to, you know, discuss a case, the Demons in Seattle case that obviously has gone national, including the UK and so forth. And we have all three on board with this in queue. And I think we should just, let's get our paranormal on and get them in queue. So welcome, Carissa, Nikki, and Kyle. Hi, how's everything going with you guys? Hey.
Good.
It's going great.
I'm doing good.
That's awesome. Hey, so I've been told that you are basically en route or almost en route to Seattle, Washington.
Who, me? Yeah, I'm actually leaving not this Monday, but next. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. So are you all three going to be meeting at this house where this activity is happening, or what's the plan of attack?
Yeah. I think Kyle's going to actually start with the UK team before I even get there, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Kyle?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and then I'm going to be flying down, and I'll be working alongside Kyle and the UK team for a few days. And then the UK team will go home, and it will be me and Kyle, and then Nikki's coming down for, I think, 4 days. Right, Nikki?
Sure, I am. Like 4 or 5, yep.
And that's pretty much the game plan of attack.
Yeah. So can you just give us a breakdown, a little history? And I guess, Kyle, you were one of the first ones to actually investigate this, this house and were the first one on scene with this particular case in Seattle?
Yes, I was.
What drew you to the case in Seattle? What was the complaint or what? You know, kind of break down what happened a little bit there.
My client Keith, he actually had contacted us, and because he had some concerns of what was going on in his home, and he had sent some YouTube videos that he had taken to us and some pictures that was going on in his home. So he wanted us to look at the videos and the pictures first, and then myself and a couple of my members in my group went ahead and met with him and talked with him in person, and he gave us the okay to investigate his house. So we went and kind of like, it was kind of like when we met with him, it was kind of like an interview to see what was going on and stuff. And then kind of we went to his house from there.
So, I mean, what separates this case, Kyle, basically? You've been there, you've talked to the, interviewed the family at first there. What separates this case from, you know, other cases you've done? What stands out there?
The thing that makes this case stand out more is a lot of the activity that's happening there. And of all the things that have been going on, especially with the things happening, especially with the writing on the wall and the things like that. So that's kind of what makes it more interesting than all the other cases that I've been on.
Yeah. People in chat are, you know, people in chat and people are texting me saying, what is this case and so forth. So kind of give us a history of, you know, what, you know, just start from the beginning. You know, what kind of house is it? You know, is it, you know, that sort of thing. You know, what type of family it's involving, and just kind of break down what, you know, what this case involves, if you would.
Okay. Well, the house is, it's a two-story house, kind of in the Seattle area, right in the Bothell area part of Seattle. And it's, the client's name is Keith, and when I first met him, it was with his girlfriend who was living with him. And they were experiencing a lot of things, and the land actually used to be Native American land, actually. And so, with the studying of the land, I kind of saw that there was a lot of stuff going on with the Native Americans there, especially with voodoo and stuff like that. So that's kind of a part of the land. The reason why I think the activity is there is because of that part. And also, the family, they're pretty nice people. I mean, Keith is a down to earth guy, really nice. He's polite, you know, doesn't look like he has a mean bone in his body. So he's really nice. His girlfriend is very polite. And the house doesn't seem very old. It seems like, you know, a house that was built in the early 2000s.
Yeah. So, basically, you met with this guy, then this family, and you did an investigation there. What all did your investigation, or what was part of your findings as well? I guess that's a two-point question, I guess.
Okay, well, when we first showed up, we kind of did a few sweeps with the EVP and EMF sweeps outside. And I especially did the EMF stuff outside because once I learned that it was part of the Native American area. Right kind of in the backyard area where there's running water, I got actually high EMF there. And so I had to go and ask Keith if there was anything electrical past his backyard except for that little river there, and he explained no. So I did a little bit more investigating back there, and the farther I went back, the higher the EMF went. And so it's kind of interesting with that. And then once I got inside, the EMF kind of started going down a little bit, and until I went upstairs with my group, my members who was there, we all kind of went upstairs, and I actually had a member of mine, he actually jumped up into the attic, and I had my spirit box going at the same time, and as soon as he was in there, we were starting to get a reply to a lot of the things that were happening, and we were starting to get a couple of names, and the thing there is telling us to leave it alone and stuff like that. And but a few hours later, we actually all split up, and I actually went into one of the most active rooms in the house where which is his office, and I sat there for about, I'd say, half an hour doing an EVP session, and I had my spirit box going, and I asked it to announce itself to show me that it's there so that, you know, I don't think of the client being a liar. And as soon as I said that, the closet door to that room actually opened up about 5 or 6 inches, kind of slowly, and I kind of stared at it, and I said, if that's you, can you open up even more? And it didn't move after that, but then I said, if that was you opening the door, I thank you for doing that. And as soon as I said that, the door actually slammed shut. And that, which was kind of a shock to see it actually shut that fast. So, because I haven't seen a door actually slam that shut, especially a closet door, when I asked this question. So then I went downstairs and I asked him if there was any anything underneath the house, and I found out there was a little crawl space that's underneath. So I had another member of mine, he actually climbed underneath, and he did a few EVP sessions down there, and we kind of ended the investigation from there. But through the going through all the evidence, we figured out that we had some good EVPs. We had some good stuff. We had a couple of orbs, and we had actually a small apparition appear in a picture that we took.
Wow.
So.
Hello.
Can you hear
me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Evan. As a matter of fact, you know, I have Native American grounds across, burial grounds across the street from me. Once it gets nice and warm, I'm going to go out there and take pictures and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have to be careful. Just be careful doing that. But, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's now it's all woods out there, and there's Native Americans buried way out in the woods and stuff, and there's like no sign for no trespassing. If I see a no trespassing sign, you know me, I'm not going, you know?
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, you got to be careful when you're doing any of that stuff. All right, so look, let's get back to what we were talking about here also on, the Native American part there in Washington. Do you know, Carl, what tribe that is?
I couldn't actually figure that out. I tried to dig, and I actually made a few calls, but when I was trying to make those calls, they said they would get back to me, and I have never heard back from anybody, so I could never figure out what tribe that was.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do some checking later after the show, too, and we'll see exactly what tribe is known for the area, too. I told the owner that, or the person, you know, that's part of the case or the client the other day, that I would do some background checking and stuff like that as far as getting information or a little more insight to what might be on that property as well. And now, why do you think the case, and this is a question that's been asked for the last week, why do you think that the activity that you experienced is demonic?
The reason I think it's demonic is because of the stuff that the client he has witnessed and seen on his videos, especially the stuff that he's seen when he comes home, especially with the numbers and the symbols that he has witnessed drawn on the wall. And when he also explained to me about the day he first moved in, he heard a child's voice laughing. And I know that from research that that is also when that happens, that is a demonic entity or a poltergeist. That is one of their kind of a thing, saying, hello, I'm here, to the person. So, and especially with the things that have happened to the house, with things being thrown and things like that. So that's why I think it's demonic or higher up.
Yeah.
What, you know, okay, so, all right, so we got, do you know how long this activity has been happening, or do you know the, how long the family has been living at this residence?
Well, I started working on the case back in 2014, and he had moved in not too far before that, and he's that's when he said that he had, you know, first moved in and got the keys to the house. So, you know, I guess it happened to some of the old other people that have lived there, so it might have been something that's been there for a while.
Yeah.
Krista, what's your take? And I know Nikki also will be asking her, too, a little bit. Krista, so what is your part in this case? What's going on with you as far as, you know, the Demons in Seattle case?
Okay, well, you know, like I mentioned previously, I think on a show I did before with you, that back in the summer, Nikki and this other girl that we were working with, who isn't part of the paranormal anymore, unfortunately, you know, they contacted me, and they started telling me a little bit about Keith's case. I didn't know too much about it. I didn't even really know that it was the one on Ghost Adventures right away. The other girl actually told me, she's like, this case just needs, we need your help on it. So I agreed to help when I could assist. And in the little spare time I had, because that summer was very busy, I spent watching those cameras with them. You know, I give my hat off to Nikki, number one, and the other girl, because they invested some serious time watching the cameras. You know, I was only a part of that every here and there. But, you know, I started to talk to Keith after I saw some things happen on camera, and that's when I decided that I wanted to go out there and kind of live in the case for a little bit and document it, kind of what I'm known to do. I figured that this case was perfect to do so. We all know that Ghost Adventures said there was nothing there. However, I disagree with that. I do think there is something there from the things that I've seen on camera, and I'm hoping that, you know, I can document some of it and show the world that, hey, there is stuff going on.
Yeah,
and
documentation.
That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, documentation is really, really important. Let me just jump ahead a little bit. So you have all this activity going on. You know, you're talking to the clients. When you and you're going to be coming to do your investigation and stuff, what are you bringing with you? Are you using, you know, what equipment? Are you planning on using, like, Echo Box, Ghost Box, what? Or are you just going to play them by ear, using FLIR cameras, you know,
I'm going to be using a little bit of everything, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not limiting myself to one or two devices. You know, me, personally, I like to go into a location with an audio recorder. I mean, if I can get Class A EVPs somewhere, that is the ultimate holy grail in my eyes. That's, you know, that's my favorite piece of equipment. But, of course, we're going to be using all different things. I'm actually going to be working with Kyle most of the time. He's going to be about 10 minutes away from the case. So we're going to be doing little experiments and documentations during the day. And then when Nikki comes, we'll be doing even more. The game plan is just to document as much as possible and try to prove as much as possible the homeowner's claims of the activity. You know, I think it's very important since there is stuff going on there. And I'm sorry, but for all of those that just watched the episode of Ghost Adventures and are saying this case is a hoax, you cannot judge a case based on a few hours of an investigation or a few days. Because things hide. They're not a circus act. Spirits do not perform on cue. You know, I might not even get a lot of the stuff that he's claiming, but that doesn't mean that it's not true. It just means that they're not, it's not a circus, you know, but I am going to try to get some evidence to back up his claims. I think that that's very important to get his name back and ultimately lead to the help that he needs to have.
Well, what exactly is the help that they need? That's what I think people are a little confused on.
I think so, too, because right at this point, we don't have, I mean, when you say demonic, man, okay, let me just mention some things demonic.
I think it's a poltergeist.
What I'm thinking it could be is not exactly demonic, but it it could have been early, in the early stages, and it has moved up into a poltergeist.
Yes.
Because that,
and
that
I
can
wouldn't,
happen.
Yes. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, there was a blessing done, whatever you want to call it, whatever was done. I don't know the specific details on that. There was stuff done in the house to cleanse the house and the homeowner. So what is left could very well just be other things. However, that wouldn't surprise me. However, I think right now what we're dealing with is a poltergeist, in my personal opinion, and everyone's entitled to their own opinions. And, you know, that's me saying that, and I haven't even been there yet. I will have a better idea once I get out there.
Well, what are they
saying
has been happening to them? I think that's what everybody's trying to ask, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Like, what has been happening to the homeowners that are making them so...
He's had a really rough time. I mean, in the beginning, if I'm not mistaken, Bibles burning, you know, it all started just hearing a child's laughter. Hearing that laughter, he said that was the first thing that happened. And then, you know, it escalated to fires in the house, Bibles burning, a shuffling sound going on. You guys can fill in, too. Kyle and Nikki as well, if you, because I mean, shadows,
yeah, exactly.
The bed shaking.
Exactly what you were saying, especially with the Bible burning. He actually had posted a YouTube video of it actually happening because he heard a noise, and he had a camera that he had running to help film these things on the videos he was making, and he actually went up to it, and it looked like it was burnt to a crisp.
You know, and
so
I've interviewed other people. Oh, sorry, Kyle. We're going to
talk
over each other all night. I'm sorry. I just wanted to jump in and bring up the other team that I interviewed. Nikki, myself, and the other investigator that were watching the cameras all summer, we decided to interview other teams, which is actually how I came into contact with Kyle. We also interviewed this other lady, and she says that she brought sage into the house, and it lit on its own. And she was actually the one that was interviewed a little bit on Ghost Adventures. They really didn't interview all the witness testimonies, and that's what myself, Nikki, the other people, and the UK team have been doing, interviewing. And, you know, everyone that's been there except for Ghost Adventures says, hey, there's activity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kyle, you can continue.
And especially like you were saying with Ghost Adventures, you know, like they could have also had an interview with me too. But at that time, Keith and I had agreed to keep myself and my group confidential at the time, so that's why we were never interviewed at the time. So,
well, it's not so much important, you know, Ghost Adventures saying there's not activity. Because here's the thing, spirits don't
different
act on
type.
Here. They're going to do what they want to do, you know, so we don't care about that too much.
Yeah.
I mean, take a look at a case that I did, the Jervis case. I was there 11 times, and we got nothing. Until the 11th visit, we were there, right? Then, at 12:01 midnight, hold on a minute, I got a damn train coming by. When that comes by, it's really loud. All right, so we're there at 12:01 midnight. All our cameras shut off, and we got an apparition that actually formed at the bottom of the basement floor, went up along the wall into the child's bedroom, like they said, but it took 11 visits there before we got anything. And that night, we got lucky. We got actual knockings and stuff that were actually responding to us. So it took, again, 11 visits to get something. So, yeah, you know, just because, and I'll say this, because people are messaging me saying, hey, there's nothing conclusive from Ghost Adventures. Well, that's right. Maybe when they weren't there, but that doesn't mean it's not there. So people should take that into consideration that if you don't find evidence, that doesn't mean it's not there. You may have to keep coming back, you know, and it might not be something that's residual, that, you know, it might come and go. And I've been witness to some paranormal phenomena that comes and goes that I cannot explain, but that doesn't mean it don't exist. So
I also have a couple questions coming from the chat room on if there's young teens that live at the house. And we also have one girl that call is hanging on hold for when we can take questions also.
Okay.
There's no young kids living there. If that was the question, I think that was the question, right?
I think the way they were asking that is because a lot of the demonic type issues is always, usually, not always, but a lot of times, oftentimes, centered around youth or adolescents, you know. And so that's probably why that question was coming up. We've seen a lot of that.
Okay. The one thing about the kids, though, is that a previous homeowner that did live there had two or three kids. And one of the kids there was a special needs kid. And that, from what I had read from other people, and especially coming from Keith, is that special needs child had experienced a lot of stuff going on, especially like they were talking to other people that weren't there, and the parents had no idea what was going on because the kid was talking to just like they were facing the wall, talking to the wall, and they were saying, "Oh no, someone's here. I'm talking to them. This and that."
And see, that's the dangerous part of stuff like that when that happens, Kyle, because there's a thing that I always talk about, and you'll hear me talk about this a lot on shows, obsession. You know, there might be phenomena happening, and you start, you know, getting involved, you're hearing things, and all of a sudden you may be talking to it. It gets rooted within your system, within your subconscious mind and everything, and that's how it seems to want to, you know, according to theory, how it kind of gets involved. And it, you know, the demonic will take an easy avenue. They're not going to want to try to take on a healthy person or somebody that doesn't have any mental issues or anything like that. They'll attack the weak because that's the easiest way. I mean, that's what the demonic does, right? They go after your souls, right? So it's kind of eerie when you mention about, you know, the young one that you were talking about, and it makes you wonder, did this, whatever could be there, did it come, you know, was it following this kid or this person? Did they bring it? You know, is it land barren? Is it in the landlines? You know, there's a lot of questions that hopefully when you guys go do your investigation there, that you can try to find an answer or a solution to.
Yeah.
Carissa, did you have more questions in chat room that you wanted to ask? I'm sorry, Charity.
I was so
I have one person that called in. Can we let her through and ask?
Sure, we can.
I'll bring her on. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you? Did you have questions for our guests? Is this Boston
I did.
Girl?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I'm from a part of the state that has, you had a show the other day where someone mentioned North Andover, which is about half an hour away from me. But the main question I had for the people that were investigating this whole thing, now I haven't seen Ghost Adventures. I don't have cable. I'm going to tell you that right now. So I have no prior knowledge of this situation. I have no bias. I don't even know what the show is. But part of the biggest issue with investigating things, Native American types of things, is to find out not only what tribe, but also what type of land the actual house is on. Have you been able to look up the deed? Because I don't think it's the house. I think it's the land.
Yeah, I think the same thing as you. I think the land has a lot to do with it. Unfortunately, I personally have not been able to find much information on the land. I'll let Nikki and Kyle answer that too. And I also know there's a UK team that's going down that's very well known in the UK. And I'm pretty sure from last I heard that they have located it. You know, it's hard to keep in touch with everyone So I won't know until I'm there what they came up with and everything like that, since we are all on different time schedules. But
no, I mean, I understand that. I just, I don't want you to, like, I don't want you to feel like I'm attacking you, because I feel like you got a little defensive.
No.
But I just literally have no idea of this. It's just, I feel like they disturbed something. Was there, like, recent construction or a change, or did they change the lawn? Did they dig something up? Did they put a pool, something along those lines? Did they disturb, like, the earth in some way?
Nikki, what about that concrete slab? Remember that?
Yes, he had stated, Keith had stated that some of the research that he was able to find on it, on the property prior to the community being built there, because it's like a subdivision, there was a large concrete slab over, I guess, the span of, I'm not sure how many houses, but he was able to find that it had covered where his house is, and it was hard to find. I could not find anything in relation to what that could have been. So I'm not sure if anybody else will have, if there's any relevancy to that, but it was rather interesting because it was a, you know, decent-sized part of property. Yeah.
Well, it's just, when you were talking about it, that's what popped up in my mind. Also, I was mentioning that I'm bad with letters, and I could be wrong, but there was a big S, like there was a tribe that was an S. Someone mentioned different names, but the land was disturbed in some way. It's not the house, it's the land. And someone, I feel like it's either like a grave marker or like a grave or something, some kind of thing there that was there for memorializing, and I'm not sure who. And it wasn't like a slaughter. It was actually people who lived there prior in the situation. Something was moved, or something was torn up or moved. Or so, I mean, when you get there, there's a way to look up the deed of the land and figure out what was there prior. You might be able to figure out a little bit more of what's going on with the situation.
Yeah, that's one of the game plans, and it's actually interesting that you did mention that, because I do know that area of Seattle from the research that I've been able to do. Now, it's not easy because, I mean, research is never the easiest part. That's always the hardest part for me anyway, but it is important. And from what I've been able to figure out, that area of Seattle did have a lot of Native American massacres. And, you know, Keith has also mentioned that. Ghost Adventures touched on it a little bit. But there has been a lot of Native American deaths in that area. And from the beginning, I felt like there was Native American aspects to it, but also something with witchcraft. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but I do feel that possibly when that big concrete slab was there, something happened, kind of disturbed the land. And that's kind of my gut feeling. And I haven't been able to back that up clearly, but I'm hoping to be able to find out more once I'm actually there.
Yeah, and especially with the land there, there's lots of running water, like the creeks and a couple of rivers, especially the one that runs past, behind his house, as I was explaining earlier, where with especially running water, it's going to make the activity go higher, because that's what running water does.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I just have a feeling that it's something to do with something along those lines. But it's not that I don't doubt that there were massacres in that particular area, but I think the section in which you are investigating, even though it may have had massacres, I don't think that it has to do with an actual massacre. I think it has to do with a family, and I feel like they died from like smallpox or something like that. And some kind of disease or some kind of famine, something like that. And they all basically died, and they were all chilling there. And I feel like once the land was disturbed, because in Native American culture, if you know much about it, once you disturb a grave, mm-hmm. like all heck breaks loose. So
yep.
Once you know, I mean, like the spirits come up, all kinds of craziness happens. They attach to people. So I don't doubt that there was a massacre. Of course, I mean, the Native American. I just feel like that there. That particular piece of land has something to do with, like, a family that died, a large family that died of a disease. And I could be wrong,
kind of,
but that's kind of what I'm getting.
No, it's kind of interesting that you do bring that up as well, because when Nikki and I and the other girl were watching the cameras, something correlated to that. The woman screaming, Nikki?
Yes, the woman screaming, which I picked up. It was crazy. I mean, you know, I was actually talking to Keith, and I had the cameras that were running downstairs with audio, and I had it in the separate my poor room. It was like a computer base station. I had audio on like an earbud. I had another headset on the other side talking to him. I could not hear a woman screaming in the headset with him, although in the earbud connected to the cameras in that particular area, I was hearing a woman screaming. And Keith was at home. He was upstairs. So, you know, that in itself was a little strange. You know, I did have him go down. It stopped and then started back up. I couldn't explain it. But, you know, of course, I'm reviewing it remotely. So I, you know, have to take into the fact that I'm not there to be able to rule out all factors. But it went on for a decent length of time. And Carissa, were you there that evening on the phone as well?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I
yep.
Yeah, and it went on for quite some time. And I don't know if that's related to the land or some previous things that had occurred within the residence.
And then we hear a little kid, too.
The tenants. Yes, and a little boy, it sounded like, at least to me, and a man having a discussion. There was no one at home at the house at all at that time. The only thing running was the cameras and the, you know, obviously visual and audio. And I could hear a man and a child talking. At one point, one day in the middle of the afternoon, I heard a woman and a man arguing and a small child interjecting.
Was it a boy?
Go ahead.
And the night that I was actually there investigating, there was a name that came across the spirit box. And I can't remember exactly the name, but it was a long name, too. It sounded like a name that, you know, it's probably like in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where, how, and we kind of said, is that you that is here? And we never got a response back. So I don't know if that was the person's name that was, you know, that's there or not. So I don't know. Because we never got more responses back after we announced the name more, so...
Right. Yeah, I didn't speak through the system and try to communicate with anything at the residence at that time.
I did.
She did, but it wasn't at that particular occurrence. I was trying to make out what was being said. I basically monitored remotely as best I could, being as far away as I am. But I did it for a ridiculous number of hours, day and night. I knew his trash schedule. I mean, I knew with the landscaping schedule, it was. I knew the sound of the ice maker. You know, I knew his schedule when he'd be home. Like something was out of sorts. It was rather weird. You know,
sleep.
I did. Yes, I felt like really, really weird. But yes, I was, you know, watched. You know, him sleeping, and wishing I was sleeping. But you know, to monitor if there was anything, you know, happening and perhaps around him. Because he did have occurrences within that room relating to him in bed. So, you know, I tried to do the very best I could from, you know, being remote, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to be able to actually be there present at the location and maybe hopefully answer some of my questions, some of his or something.
The one thing that bugs me out now that we're talking about it that I can't debunk, like, you know, everything else we viewed remotely. So like Nikki said, we did our best. You know, we couldn't see the whole house. We couldn't see the outside of the house. But the one thing is that we caught what appears to be an actual apparition of a Native American woman in his bedroom. And I've never seen anything like that on camera. Have you, Nikki?
No. Mm-mm.
And
I mean, he goes and fluffs a sheet, and then there's an apparition of a woman. And for me, I can't debunk that. I've tried. I can't debunk it. It's not matrixing. It's fully there. You can see through her.
Has there been any occurrences like, you know, physical sensation, you know, touching, you know, anything like that, anything forceful or, you know, has there, you know, when you're dealing with demonic activity, you're also dealing with a lot of activity, like you might be attacked while you're sleeping or getting ready for bed. You could be in a shower. Is there anything that would be considered, you know, really harmful or more of a personal attack? Does anything like that happened with the Demons in Seattle case?
Actually, yes, there has. when I first met Keith, he explained where a day where he was actually working from home, and he was there all by himself, and some of the activity he could hear in the hallway and into his bedroom, and then it kind of quieted down, but then he had gone down to get some food for lunch, and he made it down, I think, 3 steps, and it's not the staircase to his house. It's not like a straight down. It kind of curves, you know? And he made it halfway down, and he said that he was actually shoved from behind, like someone pushing you from your shoulder blades area, and he had actually injured his leg. And a few nights after I was there, he actually had given us a call, and he said it was pretty late. It was after 1 o'clock at night, and he said that he was laying in bed, and all of a sudden, he felt like he couldn't breathe anymore, like somebody had their hands around him, holding him down, and he couldn't move his legs at all.
Like he was being pinned down, or like something was on his chest, is a complaint that I've heard from a couple different, you know, cases that I did. What about has anything in the house, like, levitated? Has there been floating objects, you know, anything like that that anybody's complained about?
Kyle, you can answer that.
What's that?
No, I was just saying you can answer that better than me and Nikki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was actually a thing on his kitchen table when we were there. It had actually levitated a few inches, and then it moved off to the table and landed on the floor and broke. And to some of the videos that I had seen that he had sent us, there were a lot of things from this kitchen that had actually come out of his cabinets and flown and actually fell to the floor from his kitchen cabinets or off his tables and stuff like that. And where it looked like he'd actually came home, walked in the door, and he actually sent me a picture where it looked like somebody had been in this house and just ransacked it and just threw everything off onto the floor, where things were like 5 or 6 feet off the floor, where it was in the middle of the floor, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. Has there been anything like disembodied voices? Has there been any, scratching or growling or anything like that? Any complaints or anything like that?
Disembodied voices, me and Nikki on camera, so I can definitely vouch for that.
What were they clear enough, audible-wise? What did the disembodied voices say?
I mean, it's hard to make out, but like Nikki was bringing up earlier, from the cameras, we heard a woman and a man arguing with a kid intervening. We heard a woman screaming for help, literally screaming, which was the freakiest thing, one of the freakiest things I think I've seen. I can't say for sure the scratches. I think Keith has complained about that, but I'll let Kyle answer that. But disembodied voices we've heard with our ears.
Yeah. Kyle?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of disembodied voices, especially on the night that we were there. You know, we got some pretty good EVPs, and especially, when he had opened up the attic, we had definitely heard some stuff up there before he went up there, so that's why we had sent one of my members up there to investigate. So he was definitely hearing voices up in the attic area.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. Now, before you did your investigation, did you check on the person's background at all as far as health issues, you know, mental stability, that sort of thing?
No, I did not.
Okay. All right. So,
yeah, I keep that information private. I keep all client information private, whether or not I did the background check. I do not release any of my clients' information, and I do not talk about me doing it. But that's mine. I just don't really.
Well, no, that's absolutely understandable. But No, I was just asking that question to find out if that was done, so you knew, if you knew, because if it wasn't done...
That's what a lot of people are asking, I think, Evan, right?
Yeah, they want to know if it was done beforehand, because it explains, you know, I mean, you know, it explains a lot. Just because if they did have any kind of issues like that, it doesn't mean it's not happening, but could explain why it's happening more. Makes sense?
No, it does. I just, you know, I think that background checks are very important on the clients. I also find it very important for the clients to do background checks on the people investigating their homes. I think that that's a very important step. I don't talk about if I do it or not on radio shows,
yeah,
but
well,
I do think it's an important step if that says anything.
Now,
yeah.
Did I just miss, I might have missed this part when I was trying to answer all these messages, but so,
yeah,
so far the substantiated evidence is the voices, and then you guys have, different people have captured like the EVPs and the audio on the videos and stuff. But how many times has it been physical, or has anybody gotten ill? That seems to be the majority of the stuff I'm getting now. I'm just trying to answer everybody because they keep asking.
Keith, you know, had gotten that fall, and where he was lying in bed that night, and he had given us a call where he felt like he couldn't breathe and he couldn't feel his legs. There was also reports, you know, where, like, one day or his girlfriend would wake up feeling really, really sick to her body, to where she could barely, you know, like, move, and she felt so sick to her stomach, you know. But, you know, like we had just, like, you know, told them, you know, if it's, you know, a major illness, you know, we'd have them go to the hospital and we would meet them there. But it never got to that point to where they had to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, if there's demons in Seattle, they can stay there. I'm glad I'm in Oregon.
So, I mean, especially with me living so closely, you know, I hear a lot about other, you know, cases, like, not as big as this one, but, you know, I go into a lot of places that are like a small cases of this case. So,
yeah.
Well, I think that's where a lot of the people are asking questions, because I think a lot of the listeners have, you know, been in situations where they've lived in a really active home, or they are investigators or were investigators, and I think that's where a lot of the questions are coming from. They're just asking what the severity is.
Because
a lot of, I guess, like, you know, this, you know, like the night, or what they would love to say is medically, the sleep paralysis, certain things like that, I guess, is happens, you know, quite often. So they were just wondering, like, has there been anything severe that's occurred?
Basically, all that I know of is, like I said, with those injuries, and then with them feeling a little, was sick, and, you know, being able to breathe. So that's all that I've always have reported. So, and a lot of the stuff that has happened, you know, I can't really explain, because I try to keep that private between my group and me and the client. So,
what about pets? Does the client have pets in the house with them?
No.
No, he does not.
Okay. All right. I love having clients that have pets, because you learn a lot from their pets. You know, I did one case where the pets were actually really quiet and kind of jitterish and kind of shy, not acting right. You know, the one dog would walk around with its tail between its legs, not a good sign. Dogs are very intuitive, you know, and even cats, actually, they'll tell you if there's something there, and you just know. So that's why I was asking, because that's also a good telltale sign. Maybe people will get the idea and start bringing in trained pets, dogs per se, in some of their investigations, because that would be a really good measure, you know, good tool.
Yeah, the problem,
they use it for everything else.
The first local team I worked with, we actually worked a lot with animals on cases. They were actually one of the teams that was featured on the Animal Planet show. I forget the name of it, but it was one, I don't know if I can't remember it, but they were actually featured on that show a lot because of their work with animals and the paranormal. So I kind of learned that from them. Unfortunately, my dog's not too good of trained to bring into people's homes.
Crazy. And there are people out there these days that are training animals, especially dogs, to be paranormal investigators and go teams because with the science between animals, like dogs and cats, they can see and hear a lot of the things that we can't see or hear. Like if there's an apparition in the home and we can't exactly see it with our own eyes, they can actually see it. People are training the dogs to where when they're at an investigation, for the dogs to go towards that apparition and have the members go with them to bring them to the activity.
Yeah. Now, when you were talking about the EMF levels, where was that again? Was that inside the house or outside or?
Oh, we got really high EMF outside, right in the backyard, right next to the house. Because there is a running creek right behind this house, and so I think that kind of helped it with the high EMF. So
it certainly can. It can depend on, you know, it can depend on a lot of things. But did you notice, when you were doing your investigation, any temperature fluctuations that would be, you know, big enough or large enough for you to take notice? Did you do any heat imaging or thermal heating testing at all, or in certain, you know?
With the temperature stuff, we run with a temperature gun with a laser light on it, and we do kind of a test where, we check the room temperature and we ask whatever is there to lower the temperature about 10 degrees. And we were actually in the living room and we asked, because I think it was like 65 degrees that night inside of his home. Mm-hmm. And we had asked for whatever was there to lower the temperature 5 degrees or more, and it actually had lowered it 11 degrees.
Did you smell any, you know, foul odors, or did you smell any sulfuric type smells at all when you were doing your work there?
I didn't, but I never did at all.
Yeah. That's also can be a sign of things to look out for when you go. I assume you're all going back there again here soon, so there's some things you can look out there for as well. Mm-hmm. Temperature fluctuations, you know, foul odors or smells, that sort of thing, all different signs that you should be looking for. Not saying that they're all going to be there, but sometimes they are.
And one part, actually, during that night when we were there, before we officially ended the investigation, what I did was I set in EVP recorders in every single room of the house, and I'd asked my members and especially Keith and his girlfriend to step outside for about 5 minutes to let the house kind of be by itself with no one in it to see if I'd get any EVPs or activity while no one was in the house. And after about the 5 minutes, we went towards the front door, and it wasn't very easy to open. It was kind of tough to open for a second.
Yeah.
So,
what?
Yeah, so it's,
go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say that, you know, because it kind of felt like somebody was actually trying to hold the door shut, but then kind of gave up, so.
Yeah. What area, is there any areas of that house that's more prevalent than other areas, or is it just all throughout the place?
A lot of the activity, I would say, myself, is in the upstairs.
What's that? Mm-hmm.
With the activity in the house, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say a lot of it would be kind of between his bedroom and the hallway to his office.
I'd have to agree.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's the most active on the cameras.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. But just for a short break, we need to take a short break here. Would you hit Edwin's promo there, Charity, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes.
I'm author Edwin F. Becker. In 1971, there was a Chicago haunting so horrific that it was the first ever paranormal event televised by NBC, and a glimpse of a true exorcism. My book, True Haunting, tells the story. It is one that nearly destroyed my life and did destroy the lives of others. True Haunting is available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or you can visit me at EdwinBecker.com.
All right, well, we are back, and for those that are tuning in late, we are listening to Paranormal Concepts Radio Network, and we are discussing the Demons in Seattle case. And I'm going to kind of leave the show to our host, Charity Oswald, to talk a little bit more. I don't want to talk the entire time. She needs to have her say here as well.
So when are you guys heading back there again to gather more documentation? Because you said you were going separately, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be heading down there next week.
And I'm heading down there next Monday. I'm going to be arriving Monday night.
And I'm a February arrival.
Oh, great.
Wow. Yeah.
You definitely need to be able to...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt here. Word of advice, you guys, if you're going to do this case, since you don't know what's really there yet, you really don't, protect yourself, say some prayers,
definitely.
Be vigil, be very watchful, if you're doing an investigation, just don't be alone. Make sure you're with somebody, Carissa, Kyle, Vicky. You know, make sure you're around somebody so if something goes wrong, you have support. And that would make me feel a lot better knowing that you're all going to do that for sure.
Yeah, no, Kyle's actually, like I said, he's going to be 10 minutes away. So even if I am alone in the house and anything goes wrong, I can call Kyle and he'll be right over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as long as you have some avenue for help or whatever, because, it. Hopefully it's not as bad as, when you talk about demons or the demonic, they're not alone, okay? The demonic, a demon has their legions, and you're up against the supernatural, if that's the case there. And, you just have to be very, very careful.
Yep.
And I wish you all well and pray for your safety there. I hope you get the evidence that you need. Now, one question that people have been asking me all night so far on the show, you get to the house, you set up all your equipment, you get ready to do your investigations and so forth. What happens if you get the evidence you need? What happens if you run into something demonic? Are you prepared to deal with a force, a supernatural force, that can and will kill you? That's a tough question.
Yeah, I mean, I personally am. I mean, I've gone head-to-head with it previously on a high-profile case. I always, when walking into an investigation, I always expect the worst, and I prepare for the worst. And that's just how I am. I mean, I'm fully prepared to walk into a life-threatening situation. That's part of what I do. I am trained in it. I don't think anyone's an expert per se, but I am trained in dealing with darker things from my experiences on the Horsefly House. I'm fully prepared. You know, there was many times when I was living in the Horsefly House where I felt like it could kill me. And that's a reality that you have to take. I mean, it is. And honestly, even if you're just a paranormal investigator, you have to be prepared to walk into a demonic case at any point because you never know when one's going to find you.
Right. We don't know what we're going into any place, you know, anywhere we go. You know, we could be to do an investigation. We could be dealing with something that we've never dealt with before. And I think that we go in, you know, prepared as we can be. And handle, you know, things and would that present themselves as they do. Because anywhere we go, you know, to do an investigation, that could be what you're facing, you know, so.
Exactly, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you know, with going into a demonic place where it can harm you or at any way, you know, you want to bring especially some of the tools to where you can protect yourself and have those near you within, you know, within reaching range at all times. And especially I've gone to places, especially places that are open cases to my group to where I've had to deal with exorcisms myself and I've had to do my own exorcisms because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be serious, you know. With that, Charlie, I guess we can end the episode here, and we'll be following the case. We'll be following you guys, and we'll have you back on to talk about your findings afterward. If you would like to come back on, we'd like that. Charity, did you have something you wanted to say before we close her down for the evening?
I guess on the last comment, I just want to put it out there for a lot of people. I know that a lot of people are listening, and I would be very careful with anybody trying to do anything. Like, don't go out and try to do an exorcism and stuff if you don't know what you're doing. I wouldn't suggest that because I know I have a lot of little new paranormal comers to the field, and I want them to be very careful. And I hope you guys are really careful. I know you will be. I know Carissa got it down. She can kick some butt. And I can't wait for you to come back and share what you found. And I think that's what I respect about you the most is that you go in with an open mind and you're completely transparent about, you know, without breaking confidentiality. If you really don't get much, you'll tell that you don't get much. If you get a lot more, you'll tell within personal mm-hmm. reasoning of the client what it is that you find. So I just
exactly.
wanted to put that out there.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you for having us. And I just want to say something before we close up too, and then we can end it. I just want to say that that is the job of us being paranormal investigators. And, you know, Kyle and Nikki are also wonderful people, and I couldn't imagine, and the UK team, I couldn't imagine having a better kick-ass team of people with me to handle this. But that's our job. And for anyone listening that gets into the field or is interested in the field, you have to be prepared for the worst. I never thought that I would be on demonic cases ever. You know, I didn't expect it until it happened to me. And, you know, I've learned a lot from that experience, which makes me able to help people now. And I will be as honest as I am. As honest as what happens to me that I'm allowed to talk about when there, everyone's going to know. Of course, the homeowner gets the final say in what is released and what is not released.
Yeah, indeed. There was a couple people in chat. Did Joe want to call in and ask a question here before we end the episode? I know Chris has got another show she's doing, and so we're running timelines there.
I think, I'm trying to see here, but I think Boston Girl might have hung on to actually finish her question. Okay. I know she felt bad. She wasn't trying to bombard you guys or give you any unsolicited advice. As you know, Carissa, sometimes with some people it comes naturally, and they don't mean it to be taken the wrong way.
No, I just want her to know that, like, honestly, it doesn't bother me. I like the hard questions because as it makes my job easier when people give suggestions. And I think that we can all learn something from each other. I don't think I'm better than anyone else. I think that we're all on the same playing field. And so, you know, when I'm on cases, if anyone wants to interject with things, they can. And, you know, that's how I work, and that's how I do things always. So I don't mind at all.
Oh, great. Well, let me see if she's still hanging on. I see her here. I'm not sure if she is listening or not. Boston girl, are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
Oh, great. Hi. Did you want to finish up before we end the show? I'm sorry about that.
I was muted halfway between what I was trying to say. Like, I was still, like, for sure, I was talking, you guys weren't responding, and I'm like, I don't think they can hear me. So I tried to speak. I was muted at some point. And I didn't get out everything I wanted to say. I mean, it was relatively quick. But as you guys were talking here, you know, I understand that some people don't like suggestions or whatnot, but what I think that would be a great idea for you guys to look at is, first of all, when you find out, I'm still stuck on this tribe thing because it's very important. If you show, mm-hmm. in order to communicate with you effectively and actually get something that you might feel could be hard evidence, and I'm not saying you don't, I'm just saying that we're other people and whatever it is. Like I said, I haven't seen the show, I don't know what's going on. You really need to show a sign of respect for the Native American people and their particular tribe. There are different prayers you could say for the dead. There are different things that you could say so they know that you respect and understand them. And that
and
is really, really, really
well,
important.
You know. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Mean, there's offerings and stuff as well, but it's really important because they need to know they can communicate with you. Just as if you were a medium, people, you know, spirits, or whatever you want to call them, you know, they can communicate with you. They know how to do that because they know who you are. Native Americans aren't going to know they can communicate with you, and they probably won't. They're very private people. So if you want a response, the best way is to research and figure out who or what it was. My personal feeling of the situation is that there was an older man, and once the older man passed, like, the whole family went to crap. He was like the patriarch. And he was like the protector. And for some reason, I got like 1899, and I'm bad with numbers as well. But something around that area, he was the protector, and he died, and I think he passed. And all these other people chilled, and they got sick, and they didn't know what to do. They were kind of like, they did tons on him for everything. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say, is like, you have to, they're not going to respond in a positive manner unless you show them that you understand and respect them. And it's understandable to assume that they're demonic. And I understand that you guys have way more experience than me. I'm not saying you don't. However, they could also just be mad at this point.
And that's what we feel, too. We feel
exactly.
The same way.
Me and Nick feel the same way, honestly mm-hmm. speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, from what you're saying, like, they're just mad. And part of the reason why they're mad, I really think you guys should look into the ground situation and find out where that... You know, sometimes with these particular situations, if you put, I don't think you can put the slab back, but if there's a way to find it, at least,
mm-hmm.
you may be able to find a way to sort of patch it up, sort of. I mean, they just mm-hmm. need, it's basically a grave marker that they removed. So, I mean, those are just the things. If you show some respect, they will respond. Right now, they're just mad. They sound mad at each other, too, and that's not helpful. You know, they're not going to speak to you if you don't understand their language.
Oh, correct. And we do have a person who is working with us who is working on obtaining that history. And as I'm sure you know, obtaining information in relation to tribes, it's a little bit more difficult than just obtaining information, you know, about other people that may have been on the property. We're going back quite some time. The gentleman who is working with us is working on obtaining that information, and we just do not have it present for us at this current moment, but we hopefully will have it before Carissa is there. So we'll definitely keep that in mind.
State,
yeah.
mm-hmm. Every state has a Native American, like, it's like a government place, but it's obviously not government. And you can actually physically go there and talk to mm-hmm. them. They have, it's like a, looks like a courthouse, but it's not. I mean, I get the words mixed up, but it's similar to that. You can actually physically go there, and they could probably answer your questions. It'd be easier to physically go there than it would be to ask for answers, because some people assume that, you know, especially with Native Americans, because I know a little bit about it. When you are looking into Native American heritage, some people assume it's not always for the best reason. It's either because, you know, you're looking into ancestry of your own, even though that's not what it is. I mean, they could assume that because of you get your card and you get this or that, or people could assume that you're trying to, like, invade American Indian land. So to physically go there would probably be your best bet. There has to be one within the Seattle area that you can go to and talk to them, and they will help you. There's a...
Hello?
I have to... Hello? Hi. How much did you hear? I was still talking.
I don't know what that... Something got muted, but, hey, we're at our show time, so...
And, well, there's a state Native American and there's a national Native American was the gist of what I just said. So either two of those could help you.
Okay, great. Me and the homeowner actually are planning on doing that, too. So definitely just keep updated with us on Facebook, and you can ask me any questions you want or tell me anything you pick up on. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
Thank you.
And the one thing I kind of wanted to say before I get to the end of this, I think Carissa and Nikki would agree. If you said there are some paranormal investigators kind of listening, if you're going to go into a place, especially that's demonic or, you know, higher up, you definitely want to get the training and research it first, and don't go in there and not knowing everything and to provoke it to where it will do even more harm and to get it more, you know, more activity. You don't want to do that.
Exactly, especially when there's families living there. I do not believe in provoking at people's houses at all.
Absolutely not. All right, guys, look, we are down to, exiting this episode, and we'll bring you back on for another one. With that said, this was the Demons in Seattle's case where we discussed a little bit what was going on with Krista Black, Nikki Unparanormal, and Kyle Ryan. And we hope to have them all back on. We had a couple of great call-ins, and we appreciate that. We appreciate everybody in chat and everybody that listened to the episode tonight. With that said, I'm Evan Jensen. This is Paranormal Concepts Radio. Charity, if you would take us out to an expo here, we will wish you all a great night, a happy and great weekend. We'll see you on another episode explaining in more details about their current findings on the case Demons in Seattle case. Well, take us out, Charity.
I'm going to be playing a few of our...
About to enter the world of Paranormal Concepts on the Paranormal Concepts Radio Network with your award-winning host, Evan Jensen, and his co-host, baby, it's Charity Oswald. Sit back, enjoy. Let's get our paranormal on.
Hold on. Now you can.